Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, 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 everybody. This is Desiree, and it is Tuesday at 7 p.m., and you know what that means. This program is sponsored by P4P Muscle, the number one drug-free sponsorship in the world. If you are a drug-free athlete and are looking for a solid foundation to stand on as well as a vehicle to drive your goals, like what, Caleb Patterson?
Ice cream.
Woo! You heard it here first. Check us out at p4pmuscle.com. And now let's talk. I am Desiree Fletcher, and he is Kalen Patterson, and together we are P4P Real Talk, aka Team Awesome. Team Awesome. If only in our own minds. But hey, if no one else is gonna love us, we're gonna love ourselves. There you have it. How are you doing, Kalen?
I'm awesome. Hey, how about that, huh? Yeah.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Awesome, awesome. So, we already have a question here, and I want to go ahead, and I'm going to go ahead and throw this out there because it really sets up the tone for the show. And so here we go, Jerry. Wants to know if why it is so important to have good judging since we talk so much about it. And we have got two great guests on tonight, Kalen being one of them, because as you know, or several of you should know, maybe some of you don't, but Kalen has been on the journey of becoming an official judge within the NGA organization. So he has been test judging the past couple of weeks. So Kalen's going to be sharing his learnings with us as well, as our special guest that we're bringing in, and Courtney Miguel. Courtney, am I pronouncing your last name right? How do you pronounce your last name?
It's actually Mile, like M-I-L-E.
Mile.
Mile, I
go.
Know.
The one question I did not ask you prior to the show, and then here I am getting caught. But our listeners know that I'm an ace at murdering names, so hopefully they'll forgive me again. Hopefully you'll forgive me. So Courtney Mile is here tonight, and she is also a judge joining Kalen to lay some information on us. Courtney, will you please go ahead and introduce yourself to listener land and let them know who they're going to be hearing from tonight?
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on tonight, guys. And like Desiree said, I am an NGA judge. And I am also a pro figure competitor. I will be making my pro figure debut later this year, likely on an NGA stage somewhere. Yeah, so it will be very exciting. Haven't chose a show yet, but that will be in the works. And aside from bodybuilding, I actually have my master's degree in speech and language therapy, and I am a speech therapist, mainly working with pediatric clients. And I just love health and fitness and bodybuilding, so I'm super excited to be here tonight to chat more about what judging looks like, and both from a competitor standpoint and the judge's standpoint.
Awesome, awesome. And so, Jerry, no, we didn't forget about your question. I was using that to set up the show, because the answer to your question is going to pretty much come throughout the show, and why good judging is so important. And, you know, it's important because the fate of the athletes pretty much hangs in the balance of what the judges think. That's how the outcomes are determined. And so it's always helpful for everyone to understand the position that the judges are coming from, as well as the tools that are necessary for judges to be able to do their jobs accurately and efficiently. And with that, Kalen, I'm going to turn the floor over to you to go ahead and get us started on our discussion tonight.
Okay, I'm like most everybody else when I first initially started watching bodybuilding. You walk out on stage, you see the best in the lineup, and you know who's supposed to win right off the bat. And, you know, the more I got into the sport, the more you start seeing the different nuances, the different poses, the different organizations, criteria. You start to see that, you know, it can be blurred if you're not informed. I think that's the best way to say it. And there's a lot of things that go on that, you know, most of the audience might not be privy to if they're not engaged fully into the competition. It would almost be like someone walking into a basketball game and not knowing the rules of the sport after they've been watching football for like the last 15 years. Certain things just aren't going to make sense because you'll say, you know, well, this doesn't seem right if they're scoring and the basket goes in, why doesn't it count? And then you have to basically explain, like, well, the person got fouled before the shot, so the, you know, the basket doesn't count. So there's some things that are missed simply because not knowing is basically a lot of what is in the amateur side of natural bodybuilding. On the pro side, pretty much people have been following their supporting their people that are on stage for a long time or more than one show. But for the amateur side, there's still a lot of doubt. But, you know, there's always going to be stress because you want the person you're supporting to win. And there's going to be some bias. And there's going to be some passion involved as well. And you add that mix, there's going to be a lot of people on the social networks that are basically, you know, crying out for pitchforks and torches if their respective person doesn't win. And, you know, it happens. It's par for the course. But it doesn't have to be so much misinformation out there to where that actually is seen as fact. And being able to help judge, I mean, it's really something special because if you do your research and if you do your homework, you'll find that there were a lot of things that you thought were set in stone are not, just because the criteria basically covers that in depth. And there are certain things that are not supposed to be done in posing that sometimes are, just because the organization wasn't researched and, you know, it's done incorrectly. And I'm going to pass it over to Courtney right now because I don't want to basically hold the court on the information that's being given, because I know we talked backstage to make sure that we were getting around right and we covered a lot of things that I might be not saying right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess one thing just to kind of continue this discussion, so the NGA has a bylaw. So that is what the judges read. That's what the judges follow. And in fact, a lot of times we have that in front of us while we are judging, just to make sure we are absolutely following the right criteria. That document is 47 pages long. So if that just kind of tells you anything, I mean, that's huge. That's a huge document. They didn't just put together a, you know, 1 to 2 page, this is what each division looks for. It's really in depth, and it really is kind of the guidelines for us to follow. So, and yeah, kind of continuing on what you said, each organization, each natural organization really does have their own set of rules. I think one of the most recent changes has been with bikini posing, and primarily the bikini back pose. There must be a hand out to the side, and generally they want the weight shifted to one side as well, instead of the more traditional NPC pose where you are evenly distributed your weight and more of a pelvic tilt with no hands out to the side. So I think that's been one big change. And unfortunately in scoring, I think that comes out if you don't perform the pose correctly, points are taken away because that pose is not correct.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's been one kind of big thing that's changed as far as like bikini posing and just in general. We were talking, if your poses are not done correctly, if you're not in doing the right pose for the right division, it makes it very hard to score accurately. And some people can definitely be upset by that, but I even urge the competitors to kind of take a look at what your specific division requires, because that's what we're basing off of it, not just how do you look on stage. So there's a lot more that goes into it than just what you're doing up on stage.
And that's a good point, because, you know, in the audience, if they might miss where a judge is calling for a correct pose to basically give the competitor a second or third chance to get it correct, but if they don't, like you said, those points will be deducted, because you can't basically give that correct score to somebody that's doing it right and not and basically neglect from dealing with a person that's basically either ignoring the polls because they choose not to do it or simply didn't do their practice and homework and get the polls correct. So, you know, it's a lot of things that the audience might miss, but the judges mm-hmm. have to be keen on in order to get it right, because I think that's the biggest thing. No judge in their right mind wants to take away the time and effort someone has put in and then blow it for them because we didn't do our research and homework. If you're really, you know, serious about being a judge and not just someone scoring an athlete. Dez, did you have anything?
Nope. I think you guys, I mean, as far as, you know, working to prep, I mean, this show is more so about you guys. I have not gone through the process yet of becoming a judge. So I think the most important part of the takeaway tonight will be having your perspective coming in, one as a more yes. veteran judge and one as the person that's just going through the process and, you know, just the learnings that you've come to thus far. But with everything you've said so far, no, I have nothing to add from my perspective other than to say, you know, in addition to the bylaws, there are also videos that I know the NGA puts out mm-hmm. To help the athletes as well as the judges prep for any show that's coming up.
Yep, exactly. I think those videos are very helpful. It's just, it's, you know, they're showing you exactly what you need to be doing, you know, not looking at other organizations, not looking at other people on social media, really looking at what your organization that you're competing in requires. And that's really kind of, in my opinion, part of your homework. Part of your homework is to figure out what the judges are looking for. And kind of just now that I, you know, am a judge, it's not easy, definitely. And, you know, judges, they really are human. They, like Kaylin was saying, we are trying, we want the best for the athlete. We're trying to do them a service by judging them the best we can, you know, both providing positive and critiques, you know, wherever needed. But it's a job that the audience doesn't always see, and that I think sometimes the audience can be prematurely upset by a judge's decision when a lot more goes into it than just the first, second, third place.
Exactly. And, you know, not at this last weekend show, but the show that I judged prior to that, I did notice that one of the coaches had basically given NANBF criteria at an NGA show. So basically the posing was off no matter what they were doing, even though they were doing what they were taught to do, and it would have been correct in the NNBF, but it most certainly was not correct in the NGA, because the look and the stance is just a little bit different. And when I was letting the athlete know, you know, why basically I didn't know the information until I asked, and they don't know the information until they asked, obviously. But it was mm-hmm. more to the point of what was I doing wrong? And I'm saying, well, why were you doing this pose? And why were you doing this? Oh, well, this is, you know, how it is on the videos. And, okay, what videos were you watching? Because I need to go and research that if I missed one. And then it's to find out it's NANBF video and has nothing to do with the NGA. And, you know, a lot of times, and Ed and I have spoken about this in the past, is that a lot of people coming in to compete in the natural side of competition don't realize there are so many organizations or different criteria. So basically they're doing a one-size-fits-all. And when you basically know the ins and outs of the industry, it's not that they're picking on you. It's just that you're not fitting the format or the criteria of what's being asked for that particular show or that particular organization. And that's where the big social media fallout happens, where people are pissed off because, you know, I didn't win and I'm the best-looking person that's basically stepping on stage. Now, if you're stepping on stage in your right class and you're the best-looking person, you do have a reason to be upset. But if you're the best-looking person on stage in the wrong class and category, then maybe you should have done your homework a little bit better. And it's a true shame to see that happen, and there's plenty of times where people are either carb depleted or really nervous, and they're just not posing correctly. And I can tell you, and Jonathan Agin can back me up for this one, is I was almost hopping out the chair you know, wanting to scream and yell to fix that post, because you can see the person is so close to first place, but they're not going to get it because their posing is off and you can't see the lines and the symmetry and the muscularity the way we did backstage. And you know, you can't sit there and say, well, backstage, they would have won, so we got to give it to them now. No judge would accept that from themselves or anybody else on that panel. And I'll pass it to Courtney, and she can put her input on that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've definitely been seeing that the past 2 weeks as well. It has been really difficult just wanting to give the athlete a quick tip, you know, from the judge's seat just to fix that pose or make something look a little different. I think just being a judge and being in the judge's seat, it's really given me a view of you absolutely need to do your homework with posing. You need to practice more than you think you need to. Every day when it's getting close to the show is really what it's about. But I think, I mean, one of the mistakes early on when I was a competitor I made was that I always practiced in front of a mirror. Well, newsflash, when you're on stage, you're not in front of a mirror. And that just really, that made it really difficult for me. You know, one of the first few times I was on stage, I could correct everything I was doing when I had that visual feedback. But when you don't have a mirror in front of you, nor someone else telling you, you have to know the muscle memory, how that pose feels. So absolutely practice more than you think you need to. Practice not in front of a mirror. And I also actually have a background and experience in pageantry. I competed in pageants myself and was a judge with pageants. And being on stage, having the opportunity to practice on stage was key. So I highly recommend any competitors, if you could go to your local college, your maybe high school if you have nearby, any auditorium-type stage, like actually just getting up there in your suit, in your heels or shoes, and practice your posing, I think can be huge. It's very different practicing there than at your gym where you're comfortable. So those are definitely my tips for any competitors listening, coaches as well. You want to practice like it's the real show, and that will just give you the best experience and just make you feel more comfortable so those poses are right. And so as judges, we don't have to take away those points.
And those are all great tips to know. We've got some questions stacking up on us, so I want to go ahead and get into some of those. Sam wants to know, who are some of the most trusted judges out there in the respective organizations? And I'm not sure if we are in a position to answer that outright, but I believe there are some resources out there where people can check. Okay, go ahead and go.
I can answer that one. There are several very good ones, and actually we've actually had many on our show already, but for some that haven't been keeping up with us, Keith Hunter is an excellent, excellent judge. He does very well, and he basically will call out people in an honest and open way without being rude or vulgar, and that's very important when you get feedback, because some people have an angst with the winners, especially if you have repetitive winners, because it's like, okay, if they can go to all these different organizations, sooner or later they should lose. But some people really do their research. I know there's plenty of competitors out there that will not compete in an organization until they've done all the research necessary to make sure they have a first place appearance. So, you know, hats off to that, and hats off to the judges for recognizing that. Stephen Lacey is another one that's very good. Earl Snyder is basically one of the most hands-on judges, with basically providing feedback as the show is going, sometimes ensuring, you know, people are basically able to present their best, and even to the point of asking them, you know, about if they need to eat, because some people basically get to those shows by themselves and feel so alone and are kind of afraid to ask questions. Well, he will even gauge in that. And that, to me, that's an all-around judge, because everything matters. And to find out that he's a promoter as well was a blessing, because then he's basically ensuring that format happens all throughout his shows. So, you know, hats off to those guys. There's several women, Liz Camp, at Camp Schroeder or Camp Schreier. I can't remember her last name. I call her Showbiz Liz so many times, I can't remember her last name. She's very good with the way she does it. And the husband and wife, Beth and John Arnold, yes, there we go. And they make sure that the competitors are being addressed from start to finish, if they're judging or promoting. And that's, you know, I think that's very key. When you're wanting people to be their best, why wouldn't you give them every opportunity to be out there showing their best? And basically, if they feel secure and safe and stepping on stage, then they are presenting a better package, and it's a more free-flowing individual on stage, and that's also important for judges, and they know the judging side, so that's what they want to, you know, have presented, and not somebody basically hiding away until basically the fourth or fifth quarter turn, and then we finally get to see the right person. But many have already done their scoring by then. There's other names we can post on the page if you want, but it's really, oh, I did say, I'm sorry, yes, Becky, I'm carb-depleted. And thank you, Des, for reminding me. Becky Arnold.
That's okay. I murder the names myself. But I just wanted to be sure that I was hearing right, even though I'm all carved up. So, Courtney, do
jumbo
you have anything
cookies.
To add to Kaylin's list? I know, jumbo cookies. Woo!
I don't think so. I think he covered it pretty well. There definitely are a lot of respected judges in the natural community, and I think they are all awesome at providing some constructive feedback to the competitors.
Awesome. And, you know, and the only thing that I would add to that is that I do know on the NGA side they do keep a list of their judges, and they do track their judges and their scoring to make sure that they are, you know, all within a consistent range of the other judges and are consistent from show to show, and they kind of weigh them accordingly. So I do believe that information is available if you request
yes, it.
I'm not sure if all the organizations do that. I guess that's homework that I need to do on my part, but I would hazard a guess that they do keep up with their judges, and the ones that, you know, are consistent and score well and respond, you know, effectively with the athletes, that they would be able to keep track of those folks as well. And just, Kaylin, the judges that you did list, I know part of the question was what organizations are they with. Do you recall, I know John and Becky Arnold are with the NANBF, Earl Snyder's with the NGA.
Keith has basically judged in multiple organizations as well as Steve Lacey. So, you know, they'll run into quite a bit.
Okay, cool. So our next question, I'm going to move on. Thank you for answering that one. Sarah is also wondering if it matters if the judges know or have competed. I think more so if the judges have competed in the different categories. If that impacts their ability to be effective judges.
Yeah, I'll let Courtney take that one, ladies first.
Oh, sure. Thank you. I actually competed in bikini for my first show. I am definitely more of a figure girl. I enjoy building more muscular development there. So I kind of feel like I have an understanding of bikini as well. As far as, you know, I have never competed in physique or women's bodybuilding, but I've done my homework, studied those. I'm truly just a fan as well of bodybuilding. So I am constantly looking at pictures. I am constantly, you know, evaluating physiques. I really enjoy it. So I try to do my homework in that regard, just looking at a lot of physiques, studying the poses, figuring out how different athletes do the poses, and just looking at a lot of pictures that way. So I think, you know, and then obviously I'm a female, so judging males, I try to do my homework as well. I feel like I have a pretty good grasp of it. Reading the NGA bylaws, studying the videos helps as well. I mean, I guess there would be some instance of, you know, it is a little bit different for me. I don't do a, you know, back double biceps or a lat spread or those poses myself. I guess I could practice them. I do most muscular sometimes, I will admit. But I think sometimes just studying those poses and familiarizing yourself with them helps kind of as far as but I think obviously I probably feel most comfortable with figure poses because that is where I compete at.
Kaylin?
Okay. Yeah. I would add to that, you know, a lot of the judges that I've seen that are really good judges, and not just saying there's a bias for it, but a lot of them are personal trainers. A lot of them have, like Courtney was saying, is a fan of the sport. So the passion basically doesn't stay in their class or category. It's outreaching. And if you've been to enough shows, you definitely learn body type. You definitely learn muscle maturity. That was one of the things that I definitely started learning early on is, you know, when you would ask, why does this person win and this person doesn't, they look basically the same. But to the naked eye and not an eye that's around basically structured muscle, some body types do look the same until you really start putting that magnifying glass, the mental magnifying glass to that muscle and that physique, and then you start seeing what we know as striations, striated glutes, muscle definition, basically the muscles rippling when you do the pose. All of that stuff might be missed for someone who doesn't know to look for it, but for the people that have been around muscle, which sounds kind of funny, you start seeing the different variations of it, the work that goes into it, the diet, all the small fine-tuning things that the pros are basically perfecting and the amateurs are basically getting into perfection. So there's a lot that goes into that, and it doesn't have to be basically you being a bodybuilder knowing bodybuilding. I mean, it helps, yes, but to say that you wouldn't understand what a bikini pose is, that's insane because a lot of people – especially to the good personal trainers and the good nutritionists, and they're going to do their homework. They're going to do their research. It's not just for judging day or show day. You're doing everything all the time, and I would equate it to like a rapper that knows how to flow with any form of music. You don't sit there and say, well, because he can do upbeat rap, that he'll never or she'll never understand how to slow it down and basically make a serenade. So, you know, we have to be mindful that we don't know it all, and any good person already understands that in any field that they do. But you also understand that you do have to learn and you do have to grow to get it right, just like in competing or just like in your work or just like in anything else. If you stay the same, then you learn nothing. If you grow, then you always learn. And basically, if you love the sport and if you are passionate about it, you will go that extra mile, which you're already doing pretty much anyway. And, I think that answers the question.
Yep. And so I'm not really tagging on to this, but I do want to kind of draw in another point in that Kaylin was saying is that, you know, in becoming a judge, you're going to grow and learn through the process just as an athlete grows and learns through the process. But there, that learning curve is accelerated because of the test judging process. So I think some of you have already heard us talk about this. Maybe others of you are not as aware. But when you're going through the test judging process, while your scores may not officially count during that show, they are being reviewed because you have to be within a certain percentage of all of the other judges' scores in order for you to successfully move to the next phase. So, for instance, in the NGA, and I know this just because I've been following Kaylin's process and because of some of the other guests that we've had on the show, that you have to successfully test judge 3 shows before you can be considered an official judge, and I'll let Kaylin and Courtney fill you in on those exact percentages. But what I do know is, and I've seen this in test judges, is that if your scores fall outside of the acceptable range, that show will not count towards your three. So you may be judging more than three shows. You're going to judge any number of shows until your scores are consistently in the accepted range. So, I mean, if you've got a good eye and you've, you know, done your homework, you've really studied the bylaws, you may knock it out in three shows, but that may not necessarily be the case. So, Kaylin and Courtney, can you just give a little more clarification on what that range is that judges have to be in order to have their test judging performances accepted?
Courtney.
Sure, absolutely. So I believe that your scores have to fall within 80% or 80% consistency with the other already certified judges. So if yours are not, then you are not allowed to be an official judge yet. And like you said, Desiree, you have to continue test judging until you know they feel like you're confident. And they really do follow that. I mean, they don't just say, oh, sure, you've test judged, we think you're good. They really calculate those scores, and I felt thankful to be approved, and it made me feel like I did my homework, I did my research, and I was performing at the level that was acceptable. So that really made me feel good, but it isn't the easiest process, for sure.
Yes, I mean, that should give the athletes a certain level of confidence, even for new judges coming in. Moving on to our next question, Bill wants to know, with all of the many categories, how can a judge keep all the criteria together to get it right?
Good question. Hey, go ahead.
Well, I think to start, like I mentioned kind of at the beginning, having those requirements like right in front of you while you're judging, I think is really key. And that way you can just refer back to it. Practice. I really think just continuing to practice, the more you judge, the more you feel confident with it, the more you have them memorized, and that will help. And just continue to realize you're doing your best. We all are human, and we are all trying as hard as we can. We want to make the best decisions for the athlete and ultimately reward the athlete who has met all of the criteria the best. Kaylin, do you have anything to add?
Yes. If a judge isn't nervous doing this, then they're not doing it right, because there's always something you think you missed. And there's always something you think you could have done better, but not at the expense of the competitor. There are certain times when you're basically wanting to make sure. I mean, if any competitor really wants, I mean, not well, competitor and audience member, if they really want to know how nervous it can be, watch how many times we move a really tough class, and that signifies just how important that scoring is and the placing. It's not taken lightly, and it's not basically to punish anyone on stage. That's just basically respect for the group that is up there and the work they put in, because it is that vital. I mean, I'm dead serious. It is that vital that it's done in that way. And, you know, you're not picking on any class. It just signifies just how tough and close that grouping is. So, you know, I've even said it while we're doing the judging. You know, I thank the competitors for basically their hard work, because it does make us work harder. And you know, some classes are really that easy, and they'll be out there basically just to show how they look, and basically the race, you know, the placings are pretty definite. But then there's groups where you have the top seven or the top nine, and it's maybe one or two points, and it does require more time and more work. And when you have different classes and categories, if you haven't done your research, you might drop the ball, you know. And I think that's where a lot of that, the term subjective, comes in, where somebody really didn't do their homework or research as a judge and is basically going off the wrong organization's criteria. It, you know, if you're mentally drained, you might slip like that. But, the, you know, like Courtney was saying, it's a lot of research and a lot of homework to do, but if you do it, you will very rarely miss. And if you do, the play, I mean, if the high and low numbers are dropped, even if you drop the ball, it's only going to be one person scoring, not everyone out there. So, you know, we want a lot of judges basically to ensure the right person gets the right placing. So, you know, it's not just one person making that decision. You have a head judge for a reason because, you know, they've got the most experience and they've also had the most understanding of the organization and the bylaws. But everybody out there is pulling for first place through fifth. They want that right order. So it's not one person, or when you hear a head judge, they override everyone. And if you do have that, then I sure won't be on the judge panel again. We want everyone to be everywhere they're supposed to be and no one to be anywhere they're not supposed to be. And that is why we do our homework and research. And it takes some time. You know, it's almost like sitting down in a college class and, you know, doing it and doing it, testing yourself before you have to take the actual test. But when you do have that moment, you don't blow it, just like the competitor that isn't supposed to blow it on stage when they have their moment. And you know, that's just respect for the work they've done, and that's basically doing everything possible to make sure they get the respect for what they've done.
Yeah, absolutely. I just wanted to reiterate that, yeah, there are five judges for a reason, and it's not just a single judge making that decision. And, in fact, the high and low scores are dropped, so it's another layer of ensuring that, you know, you're not – some judge is not making a score that is not in agreement with the other ones, that isn't affecting the other scores. So I think that's just another important point to bring up at the whole panel of judges.
And the point that I was just going to tag on, and Kaylin and I have had this conversation, I know he's had this conversation with others as well, is that to both Kaylin and Courtney's points, that when you do your homework, you follow the criteria, you have the safety nets of the high and low scores being dropped, that judging is actually, you hear it talked around that, oh, this is a very subjective sport, and to a certain degree, I tend to agree, but given all of these factors, it really starts to come into focus of being a more objective sport when you look at all of the things that go into judging, if it's done correctly. When judging is done correctly, it's an objective practice. When it's not quite 100%, I think that's where the subjectivity starts to slip in. Maybe Kaylin and Courtney, you guys disagree, but that's kind of how I see it. Thoughts?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you, Desiree. It's much more objective with the rules, and when you follow those, it only becomes subjective when you decide that you, for some reason, like one competitor, you have an acquaintance, or you know someone, or you have some other information that's making you choose that competitor. When you're looking at those factors, oh, I know her, oh, she has a cute face, or something that is not related to their physique, not related to what we're judging, that's subjective material, and that's what we're not looking at. So regardless of whether you like a person, know a person, that's not what we're judging on, and it does become very objective. If you look at the category, it, you know, clearly states how the pose should be, what their muscularity should be like, and if you're following all of those criteria, then you know which placing to give what athlete.
Yes.
Kaylin?
And piggyback that, you know, there's plenty of times where we've seen great-looking athletes that are in the wrong category, mm-hmm. and they're the best person up there, but that doesn't mean they win. There's plenty of people that would be a great look in an organization that's not the one we're currently watching. That doesn't give them the right to win. If they're not matching the criteria, it's written for a reason. This is what they expect to see, the organization. The judges should expect to see what the organization expects to see if they're judging in that organization. a lot of times, and I've seen it more times than I want to count, is where you have someone saying, oh, I got this, as a judge, stepping in there and realizing, you know, this is the best person there if they were in the NANBF or if they were in the DFAC or if they were in the OCB. But that's not what the NGA is looking for, since we're talking about, you know, the shows we've been able to judge. If that happens and they realize at the end of the night that they blew it, the feedback will be so poor that the competitor will be even left with even less understanding what the heck just happened, and they just have more questions and concerns about even wanting to compete, which is what no one wants to happen as an athlete, as a competitor, as a judge, as a supporter, as a promoter, any part of that. You don't want someone leaving with a disillusioned state of understanding of what just happened because I thought I followed the criteria, which they did. But if a judge is not on point in doing their research, then it does become subjective because basically I thought so-and-so should have won if they had been in another organization or if they had been in another clan. If we don't do our job, then there will be mistakes. And, you know, a lot of people don't want to own up to that, and so they won't admit it, and that's where – to me, subjectivity comes in where it shouldn't, because there should be no point in that if we're doing our job. The criteria is written down. Courtney has seen it. I have seen it. It's right there in front of us to study, to digest. So by the time that show happens, we're more than ready of what to look for. And if you don't match up to that, I don't care how good you look. I'm not scoring you first place because you don't match up to the criteria that says first place is. I mean, we had some guys in the respective classes over the weekend that were first place bodybuilding all day, but they were in men's physique. Do we get them first place because they were first place bodybuilding? I say the nay, to quote Thor, and hey, I just did.
And so these are really good comments. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to kind of give the athletes a possible solution. So we have seen a lot of athletes in the wrong category, and they did have that first place physique. So I guess what do they do? How do we prevent that? And even a couple weekends ago, it was even worse. I mean, we were estimating maybe 7 athletes were in the wrong category, in which their placings could have been much higher. So perhaps in order to fix that problem, because I don't want the athletes to continue doing that, you know, asking someone you trust, asking a fellow competitor, a judge, a coach, asking someone, say, hey, this is my picture, this is what I look like, this is me doing a pose, am I in the right division, and is this what this division is about, or reading the bylaws yourself, kind of going through those, making sure that you are indeed in the right division, you're practicing the right poses, that way you're just setting yourself up for the best possible result and being the most competitive.
And I guess I would say to that point, ask more than one person.
Yes, absolutely.
Sometimes we have seen coaches that have put their athletes in the wrong category. So get at least 2 opinions if you're not sure, and kind of take it from there. But, yeah, I definitely agree with everything that's been said. And where I was coming up to is that this segues really well into 2 questions that we have waiting for us. So I'm going to go ahead and jump into those. I'm going to start with Jill, who wants to know if there are judges that know an athlete or are too close to competitors, since our community is so small, is that an issue, or how should that be handled if that ends up being the case?
All right. I think a couple things. I do know a number of athletes personally and have judged them. And I think kind of what we were saying before, you kind of have to remove that subjectivity. Sure, I like you as a person, but if the person is professional and understanding, they're not going to fault me for putting giving them the placing they are. As well, we have a five panel of judges. So I judge them based on my criteria, not based on our friendship or my acquaintance or however I know them. I judge them based on the criteria. And I think a lot of people truthfully just need to recognize, you know, the job at stake. It's difficult. It's not easy. And we are judging all of the athletes on stage, not just the person we know. And we're looking at each person, and the best person who fits in the criteria is going to win, regardless of if that's your friend or not. I mean, I'm sure it happens some places, unfortunately, but I think we're all working to make the best decision and make sure that that doesn't happen in the NGA, at least.
Yeah. Really? And I would say this, you know, it is from the outside looking in, we are a tight-knit group. I'll be the first to say it, and there's a reason for it, because we all know the struggle. But there's a respect to that struggle. It's not a deflection of it, but a respect of it. And what you're basically saying to anyone you're basically just giving points to is that I don't respect everybody else's work. And no natural athlete can ever feel that way, because we know the grind. We know the struggle and we know the suffering that goes into it. It has happened in the past. I know it. I saw it. And, you know, back in the day when organizations were, like, really strict and really controlling, you couldn't cross over into a different organization and not be punished for it by that organization's grouping. That is not the point in case in this time and age, because basically there's too many competitors doing all the local shows, and they happen to be different organizations when you do it. So that doesn't happen as much. There's still people that would love to have that, but I say then they're not true competitors. If you only get into a show because you know the judges, then your mind isn't right in the first place. And if the judge feels that way, they should be the first to tell you. Because if anybody were to ask me anything, I can always go back to the criteria of the way I did it. And if you want a second, third, fourth, and fifth guess me, I can point right to the criteria of what is expected and how it was judged. And if you want to set the pictures next to the criteria, do it. Because I guarantee it'll still be on point when it happens. And I'll actually speak well of another person that I saw this actually happen to, and that was Keith Hunter. And I happened to be backstage doing my Midwest Muscle interviews, and I saw Keith Hunter basically tearing into somebody who was getting a little bit mouthy with him about why he was scored in the place he was. And Keith was letting him have it as to why, because, you know, his side serratus pose sucked. And he just wasn't doing it, and he wasn't portraying what he should have been portraying. And I was thinking, wow, this guy's really giving him an earful. And then the guy goes, well, coach, I'm trying the best I can. And then, you know, that's when you realize it just didn't matter to Keith who was on stage. What mattered was he was doing his judging correctly as per criteria. That's what meant the most to him, the integrity of the sport. And I think all of the judges, in their minds, are doing what's best for the sport, not what's best for the individual they might happen to know. There's plenty of times where I'd like, a good example would have been at the Titan. Well, Michael Snyder, I love the guy because he busts his behind. He really busts his behind. And you're waiting for that day when he'll be that first-place athlete in the Open. But that day just wasn't at the Titan that particular week where he was competing. In my heart of hearts, I want that day to happen for him. I would love to be in the judge panel when that happens, because I know I'll score him correctly. I'm not saying I know I'll score him to win. There is a big difference in that. I want him to do his best, and I want to be there when it happens, and I would love to be in the judges panel, you know, to be a part of that moment, because I know how hard he's worked. But listen to what I'm saying. I respect his hard work. I love his passion. I want to see him do well, but I will not score him where he is not placed. Because if he's not first place, then it just ain't going to happen. He's got to do the work, but we have to score him correctly for the work he's done. And I'm sure Courtney feels the same way with that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I definitely agree. You nailed it on the head, for sure.
All right, next question. James is wondering, if a judge gets it wrong, how can it be corrected? And if it is corrected, is it done so before the show ends?
Ooh.
That's a good question.
You got that one, Courtney.
Okay. Well, I definitely hope the judges think long and hard about their decisions, and I think we all do. I guess, you know, scoring errors do happen. I think you probably should not submit your score until you feel it is accurate, and once you do that, you do need to know that that is your official final score and that it likely isn't going to be taken back. I think the cushion of where they omit the highest and lowest scores are dropped, I think that is the best way to possibly get rid of wrong scores or scores that are outliers. But I've not actually seen someone fix their score. I'm not actually sure if that's something you could do. I do know that once I do a score, I think about it. I don't just write it down quickly and then move on. I think about it. I'm also taking notes of the athletes. I definitely jot down notes, help remind myself of things that I know I'm going to forget or feedback that I want to give. You're not going to remember everything. So I'm constantly writing down notes, filling up my whole pad of paper with details that went well, you know, things that critiques, things to improve upon. But yes, I mean, errors unfortunately do sometimes happen. That is part of it as well. But we are hopefully working to make them, you know, less and not happen as often. So, Kaylin, you want to follow up on that?
Well, yeah, because, you know, for me and Courtney, this is closer to home than most people will think and understand, but it does happen. It's one of those things where, you know, nobody plans it, and, you know, depending on the promoter, I guess, is what it would boil down to. If it's wrong and someone catches it, then it should be corrected. If it's wrong and someone catches it during the show, then it should be corrected during the show. But most of the time, if there's an error, it's usually done after the competitor's moment in time on the stage is gone. And that's a sad understanding of what, you know, but I say it's like when somebody cheats in the natural organization and gets caught. They're going to take away somebody's moment. They're going to take away somebody's time on stage that should have been theirs and theirs alone. And you don't get that back. I mean, it's a sad truth, but it's a truth nonetheless. And it's the same thing with scoring. No matter how many times we can correct it after the fact, that person's time has been taken. And, you know, I think that's what means and matters most to the judges with getting it right in the first place, is that this is done right here, right now, because you don't get that moment back. And, I you know, they can compete 20, 30 times, but that memory will always be in the back of their head, and no judge would be happy with that. No true judge would be happy with that in their heart and, you know, understanding that somebody's time and moment was taken. It hurts. It hurts because there's a joy that comes from first place that, you know, you can't outshine. And if, even if it's a fifth place placing, you worked for that. You earned it. And to have that stripped from you because of bad scoring, it's just so heartbreaking because there's so many people involved. We love to say it's a selfish sport, but there's so many people involved in that selfishness. And that might sound funny, but it's the truth. There's so many people that are involved in that. It's not just the person on stage that's not getting placed correctly. It's the support group that follows them that doesn't get that right placement either. because they want to celebrate too, and they want to be happy too. They want to be there when all of it comes together because they've suffered right along with that competitor. And if the scoring is wrong, then everything's wrong. And if one person isn't placed right, then the whole show suffers. Let's just be honest. And if we don't see it that way, then maybe we shouldn't be judging. Because that one score makes a world of difference to somebody. Even if they get to see the scoring sheet later, you know, they say, well, at least this person placed me in the work that I thought I did. And if we don't look at it in that way, then we're not really doing the overall spectrum of what judging is about. Because it's more than just sitting down and putting down a placement or a score. It should be everything about the industry and everything about the atmosphere and everything about what's going on. And it all comes down to when you put that pen to paper or in the, I don't even want to talk about that. But basically getting it right. We should all be doing our best to get it right.
Well, last question, guys, and this one tags right into what you've just been saying. Ben is wondering if a show has been judged wrong, would it be admitted?
Court?
Well, I generally, yeah, unfortunately think that the error, like Kaylin mentioned, is not usually caught until after the fact. And very rarely have I seen the shows been stopped and, you know, the athletes, they re-give out the awards for a class. So unfortunately, I don't think they mean to not say the error, but it usually doesn't happen until later on. I think one other thing we didn't really mention is that a lot of times when people have different classes and the similar competitors are in the same, in different, two different classes, competitor A and B scores, one and two, and then in the very next class, if for some reason the competitors do not score like that, I think that raises a red flag and should not happen unless new competitors are in that class.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That,
Freeza.
Yeah, that really, you know, for example, like the open or novice classes or debut classes and different competitors are in each. It can really make competitors upset. It can make judges upset. And that's when, as a judge, I'm always making those notes, and I'm aware of what competitors are in what classes. And when there's big classes or when there's a lot of competitors, it can be very challenging. But I think when you're doing your judging with a critical eye, using your notes, using your tools, you need to make sure that you're scoring the athletes appropriately. One competitor cannot simply place one and two in one class, and then 10 minutes later, that competitor placed third or fourth, and the competitor who was in second automatically wins. That should not happen just 10 minutes later. So that, I think, is the biggest to be mindful of as a judge, for sure.
Okay. Now, like I said, I go back some years in natural bodybuilding, so unfortunately, I've seen the best and the worst. And I have seen where a first-place individual was scored sixth. And, you know, it was a sad moment because we all knew and followed this guy because he was Instagram. He was one of the first Instagram socialites, one of the first Facebook forum and page guys, and was doing all the appropriate work and all the necessary steps to basically have a first place. He got with the right nutritionist, right coach for the workout, basically did everything you're supposed to do. And then when it came time for the first place announcement, he was given a much less score. And it was simply because his number had been misinterpreted. And when everything was said and done, it was well after the show. And because the promoter was so ashamed of, you know, basically being the hands-on in control of everything and making that mistake, he simply would not admit what had happened. So it was a total loss as far as that show because, you know, I don't know if the air has been sucked out of the room any better than at that event, but I haven't seen it and I haven't been witness to it. And it was just a nightmare for everybody involved, because, you know, you're hyped up and you're ready, and you know at least this guy's top three, no matter how it's scored. And to hear them basically sent to the side at sixth place was just amazing. And like I said, when the promoter had realized the error, and it was, he was the one at fault because he had to be so hands-on, that he just dismissed it and never fixed it other than saying it in passing to somebody who actually shared and relayed that information to the person that was first place and could show the documentation. And it was just a sad day for natural bodybuilding, because nobody wins in a situation like that. And even, you know, the person presenting trophies could be heard saying when he was passing out the trophy, you know, I don't know what just happened. And it was that silent in a venue that was a packed house. I'm talking 500-600 people in the audience, where even the balcony was filled. It was that popular show because it was just that many well-known competitors in it. And to hear someone on stage with an echo saying, I have no idea what just happened in front of me. It was just, you know, you don't get that time back. You don't get that moment. And, you know, it really puts a shadow on the industry that we really don't need or deserve. And simply because of someone's pride or ego, the whole industry has to suffer. I mean, we have to think bigger than the here and now. We have to think down the road, but we have to think here and now about the athletes that are on stage. And if we're not giving them their if we're not giving them their just due, then we're not giving the industry its just due. And it, you know, there's too many people that have laid the foundation for us, for us to screw it up now. If we're going to accept the responsibility of what we're doing, then we should accept the maturity of doing it. And there is maturity that comes along with judging, and it has to go beyond friendship. It has to go beyond, you know, who you know and you know, how hard they work. It has to be what they're presenting on stage at that particular time, at that particular moment. And like Courtney was saying, if we're going to have situations where the scoring might be a little different. I've seen it happen where somebody basically had their diet on point for the first time in rounds, but basically depleted and all the glycogen stores fall out and they flatten out for the next time they're out there. But that's not a 1 in 5 different places. I mean, let's be honest, that might be a first or second nod at best. But, you know, I've seen it happen. I've physically witnessed it myself. So, I know those things do happen. But not like she was saying, where it's a glaring disparity, and you're like, even the judges are saying, you know, what the heck? And I know the show's running, so I'll pass it to Dad.
And that's basically our time, folks. And I know we still have much more conversation that we can go through, but we are out of time for tonight. But as always, if you guys want to hear more and want to know more, we'll talk about it more on the next episode. With that, Courtney, I just want to say thanks so much for joining us tonight. I think we've had a lot of great dialogue, a lot of great information shared, and it's been good, girl. So thanks for taking the time to be with us tonight and to share with all of our P4P Real Talk listeners.
Yeah, thanks so much. It's been fun.
So,
with that, folks, Kaylin, Snickerdoodle shout out.
Snickerdoodle for the win.
Well, chocolate way for the win, trying to steal my hashtag. But
okay,
on behalf of Courtney, Kaylin, myself, and the boys from P4P Muscle, your body is a temple, so let's build it.
Build it with Snickerdoodle.